All right, we're live. Wow. What? Corey, did you get the notifications? I did. That's a great point, guys. Anyone that's watching, if you subscribe first, before you do anything else, subscribe, and then like the video, and then turn on notifications, and then comment on the video, and comment in the live chat. All that stuff apparently makes a big difference, and I haven't been asking anyone to do it. You're presumably at some stage this week, then you're going to be a dad for the first time.
That's correct. Yeah. So due date for the wife is Thursday, but I mean, you would know better than most at this point. Pretty much any second now. So again, if I get a random phone call and I disappear, that's probably what happened.
Yeah, that's as excuses go.
Is that a decent one?
Yeah, it's like, I need to go, my wife just texted me, she's got to deliver, she can wait. Finish look, your point first.
I'll say we got 30 minutes left, she can wait. I scheduled this well in advance.
Yeah. Does she not have access to your calendar? Or?
The doctor must not.
No. So we'll give a quick little recap and then I want to dive into some stuff. You're Jarrett Smith and you are formerly of... like the kind of Boston area and Comtrain, and currently of the Nashville area and Proven, and you're Proven, and you're you coach. People of note that you coach would be Sydney McLeishan, Lucy McGonigal, Caroline Stanley.
Yep.
Anyone else of note?
Couple other semis athletes floating around, Logan Philolos, and then guy I've been training for a little bit, his name's Derek, hoping to get him in semis this year. But of the big three, though, those probably check the boxes.
Wow. Do they all come with you?
Yeah. Yep. Still working with them. It's been pretty cool, especially like with Caroline, Sid, and Lucy. They've all come out to visit. Caroline's been a few times to HQ here. Sid moved here, and Lucy's already been out here once already as well, so it's been cool to get everyone to come in and see the space.
What age are you?
What's that?
What age are you?
Oh, 38. What age are you?
I'm 35. You look really good for 38.
I appreciate that, man.
Yeah, I would have said like 34 or 35.
Yeah, the camera on the computer doesn't show the whites as much, but there.
Oh, I started getting here.
Yeah, that's a spot. You can see that guy right there.
Yeah, yeah. I started getting there. I noticed that yesterday.
Yeah, I don't hate it. I kind of dig it. I mean, fighting it's not doing any good. So no, I'm all for it.
It kind of looks like you're eating a powdered donut, but just had a really shit aim, or someone like, or someone beside you is eating one and you turned.
I got really distracted mid bite.
Yeah, or you're terrible at taking cocaine. This is an oral drug, right? You put it in here.
Or I just had way too big of a pile and just got all in it.
Yeah, you missed a bit. Caroline finished second at Crash Crucible in 2020. I think.
I believe so. Yeah, she's a fit lady. She's been pretty cool.
That's for anyone that doesn't know, it's two competitions that crashed. There's one, a team one, that's on in like 3 weeks, and team of four, and then there's an individual one in October, and I've started dubbing it the Proving Grounds before the Proving Grounds. It's like Caroline goes to Crash, finishes second. Makes it the game shortly after. Shelby Neal makes the game shortly after. Luke Parker makes the game shortly after. Colton Mertens had been to the games, decided to come anyway. Some don't fit the mold.
How long is that competition? Is that a two-day event that he does there?
Three. I think it's Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
I've never been before. Everything I've seen, it's about as well-run as a local gym comp could possibly be, and I think the model of that's pretty cool. Like, you can still do a really high level competition that's good programming testing that doesn't absolutely smash and kill the athletes once they're done the 3 days of competing.
Yeah, JR is probably going to send you a bag of shit in the mail for calling it a local competition. But yeah, I agree with everything else you said.
Air quotes on podcast. But yeah, like it's pretty dope what he's done with his affiliate to set that up and run that every year.
It's crazy. Like he basically built he essentially took over the space like that the gym is in and immediately was like, okay, how can I lay this out so that it works for competitions and affiliate classes don't suffer, which I think is really cool. Yeah, it's cool. So you've moved to Nashville and you used to live in Boston, no, near Boston.
Yeah, so just outside of Boston. Before that, I lived in Baltimore and lived there my whole life before moving up to Massachusetts. Was in Boston for about 3 years. And then, yeah, just getting settled in just outside of Nashville now.
And Baltimore, that's the Wire, right?
That's the thing that it's known for. Yeah, it's a Baltimore's a cool town, but yeah, it's a wild TV show.
I think all of my references for states and cities are either a gym, an athlete, a coach, or a TV show that I've previously watched. So everything is like, you know, based off stuff like that. I don't have any actual geographical knowledge. It's just purely based around fictional characters and real characters.
That checks out, because before I came to visit Lucy and go over to Ireland, I thought Dairy Girls was just everything that I would imagine that Ireland was like. And then I get over there and I talk to Lucy's mom and she was like, yeah, no, Dairy Girls is great. It's kind of like what it was like when I was growing up. It's like, all right, well, that's good to know.
Yeah, people weren't as funny. Like, people from Northern Ireland aren't that funny. So apart from that, it's like, it is fairly accurate, but like, there's absolutely no comedy.
Zero humor.
There isn't an actual border anymore, but there's like, mm-hmm. you know, when you've crossed over, you can kind of feel it. The wind changes. So if the wind is going north to south, it suddenly switches and you're like, oh, and the hairs stand up in the back of your neck and you're like, I've passed over. And then, you never hear anybody laugh the entire time you're there. I'm sure you know, I don't need to tell you, but you never hear anybody laugh. No, I'm joking. Fuck, I'll never be allowed back up there.
You're done.
So what were you doing? Like, did you do fitness? Were you like a fitness enthusiast when you were growing up in Baltimore then?
Yeah, I loved sports. I played sports all my life growing up through high school and college, and when I was a kid, I wanted to be a professional baseball player. Like that was the goal. That was the thing. That was the one thing I wanted to do. Now looking back, I had no idea what I was doing to even remotely get to that goal. But yeah, so sports, fitness, all that stuff. That was always the main thing in my life.
And when you are playing baseball, do you specialize in a specific position or job?
Yeah. When I was growing up, I played a little bit everywhere. But when you get to college, they start to kind of pigeonhole you. So I was mostly a pitcher when I got to college. High school, did a little bit of everything. But yeah, I went to just a small school in Maryland and played there. Went to a couple of high-level tryouts for some fun stuff, but just never materialized in anything. So just played some semi-pro ball around Baltimore, but nothing too crazy. And then, found CrossFit one day and was able to kind of scratch that competitive itch and get fit and do all the fun stuff. And kind of just stuck with it.
Do you ever play like baseball right now? No, or have you ever since? You know, just been I'm gonna go down and freak the shit out of some kid in a batting cage or something.
I would love to. It's been a minute. I coached a buddy of mine that I played ball with since I was like 13. He was coaching like a youth travel team, like a 14-year-old kids, and I did that for a summer and was able to throw batting practice to them and stuff, which is fun. But yeah, no, it would be very, very, very fun to get out and do it again. But it's been probably 6-7 years since I've played, but yeah, I still love it.
Hold that thought. Just specific input from the B-Friendly stats department. The pitcher is the one who throws the ball really fast from the circle at the guy with the stick. So he throws the ball with the stick at the guy in the circle. Okay, I think I got it. I'll figure it out. Thanks, Barkley. So you, he's actually, funnily enough, you're another one. Barkley Dale is someone I can't just say his first name, and I can't just say your first name. I can't just say Jared. I have to say Jared. And I actually think Shane Orr is another one. I can't just say Shane. I don't really know any other Shanes, I don't think. But even if I'm talking about Tia, to someone, and then I say, I won't say Shane, I'll say like Shane Orr, and I'll do the same with you, and I'll do the same with Barkley Dale. And I, Chase Ingram used to be one of those, but now it's just Chase. But it's, yeah, it's a weird.
I have that with a lot of people before I get to know them. Just like a lot, as you get to know the people, say, so Noah Olson, he was always a guy, like if I was talking to like my wife or something, like, oh, did you see what Noah Olson did at the thing or something? But the more you get to know people, it's like Chase Ingram, I completely agree, is one for sure. Tommy Marquez is another one that I have to say his first and last name pretty much.
But anyone, like I don't think there's any other Chase or there's no other Tommy that I know of.
Not at all.
Tommy, like what's the name? Hackenbrook. But like there's no one in the same that you'd be talking about in the same conversation. There's no other Chase that you'd be talking about in the same conversation as Chase. But up until, I don't know, about like 2 months ago, I would have said Chase Ingram. I wouldn't have just said Chase. And it would have been the same like Tommy Marquez. I wouldn't just say Tommy. I don't know. It's weird.
But then for you, I don't even know if you have a last name. You're just Peter.
Yeah. Well, it depends who you ask. People just call me Pedro now. So that's kind of gone as well. So what age were you when you discovered CrossFit, or how did you discover it?
A buddy of mine was doing at the local affiliate. We had signed up for Tough Mudder, one of those like 12-mile obstacle course races or something like that, and he was like, hey, come down to this gym, we'll do like a training workout or something just to get ready for the race. And I went down and just got my ass handed to me every single way you possibly could, and then signed up, I think the following week, I think I signed up for a membership, and that was 2012, and just got hooked. Would go 6-7 days a week, absolutely fell in love with it, and just never stopped showing up.
And what kind of level, you said it's scratched your competitive itch, what kind of level did you get to, like local comps, or were you like aiming higher?
Nah, local comps. What's the thing? Those who can't teach, those who can't coach. I got to a decent place where I could do all the things. I could do it at a level enough where you could have fun with it, enjoy it, and go to local competitions and have some fun with it. But never anywhere close to really, really cracking through any sort of like regionals or semifinals level.
There's a thing. I think the rest of that is those who can't do teach, and those who can't teach teach PE. So that probably qualifies over to, or sorry, phys ed if you're in the States. So how did, were you coaching then before you moved to Boston, or how did that move transpire?
Yeah, I started coaching at that local affiliate in like 2013, I think it was. And
just classes, just doing, like.
Yeah, just classes. Yeah. And then did that for a few years while I was working my like my old career. And then once I got out of that, decided to dive basically full time into the coaching gig, started doing personal training, started writing like first handstand push-up progressions and pull-up and muscle-up progressions for the local athletes in that affiliate. And then had another athlete who basically asked me to write her full programming for her to just be able to individualize her programming for her. That did that with one or two athletes there and just kept writing programming and coaching athletes and just fine tuning that as best I could. Got to a point where the job opening got posted up at Comtrain. I thought it would be a cool thing. Never thought anything of it. Never thought anything would ever come of it. Sent in my application, got a phone call a few months later, and then was lucky enough to move up there, dive in, and just keep going. So, yeah, I was coaching at the affiliate for, 7 years, I think, before I ended up going up to Comtrain. So, yeah, it was fun.
How long after you started coaching classes did you start doing the progressions and stuff, writing up those progressions?
A couple years. So I was probably 2 to 2.5 years or something where I was just coaching classes before I ended up working there a little bit more full time and doing personal training and diving into it a little bit more. So probably 2016-ish was probably when I decided to kind of dive all in on it and take a 50% pay cut from my other job to try and figure this thing out and make it work. And it was worth it.
What was your other job?
I worked at Enterprise Rent-A-Car for like 6 years. So one of the most strenuous jobs that you would never imagine. It's just like sweltering heat, long days, like you're cleaning cars in a suit and tie. And like,
why did you have to wear a suit and tie?
Because that's what you do. We would show up every day. in a white button down with a tie, dress slacks and dress shoes to rent cars. And then if the people that we had, so we would have car preps that would help detail the cars for us. But if they were out doing other things, we would go back there, clean the cars. But yeah,
so were you like, were you like front of house? Were you like filling out the forms and shit?
Yeah. So I got,
I have questions.
Go on. Let me hear it.
Is there like an NDA, like a lifetime NDA, if you work in one of those places that you're like, never going to talk to?
You're good.
Okay. Do you deliberately hide stuff that's happened to the car before you give the car out, hoping that the person won't notice and then they come back? Have you got a quota that you need to hit? Have you got like, is it like, all right, guys, we need to make $1,400 by Friday in damages, or the fucking guy upstairs is going to lose his shit? And then like, because I've seen like, I don't know if it's true or not, but I've seen, I remember seeing a documentary a few years ago. It was like an undercover thing. And yeah, this, in one of the places, I think it was, maybe it was Eurocar or something, but there was a whiteboard in the back with like each employee's name and the amount of damages that they had brought in through, like, oh, this, there's a scratch that's going to cost you whatever. Like, is there, is that thing in enterprise?
I can't speak for Eurocar or any other places, but no, that was never a thing. We would do a full inspection of the vehicle before it was rented. So we gave everyone the opportunity to look at it. But if it was damaged, we would have to like get people for it. But no one wanted to do it. It sucked. Like, we did everything on customer service scores that we would get. And anytime someone would bring the car back damaged, if we like had to call them out on it, it never went well. It never went smoothly. Like, no one ever wanted to do that. It actually went the other way. Like, some like newer employees would like not see the thing to not have to have the conversation with the customer who returned it, just to go about their day.
Bullshit. I was in the UK like a while ago. The following story is hypothetical and made up and didn't happen. Hypothetically, I was in the UK a while ago, fictionally, and I could have rented a car. And when I was renting the car, I maybe was offered insurance and I turned it down because I was like, the fuck's going to happen driving the car? Maybe drove the car from, I've probably done enough hypotheticals. I drove the car to the venue that I was doing the thing at, stayed in the hotel, left the hotel, went to the venue, went back to the hotel, stayed the night, went back to the venue, drove back to the airport. And I was filling up, like, you know, those gas stations that's like a mile from the airport, that the prices are fucking nuts because they know people like me are like, oh, fuck, I never filled it up. So was filling it up and it was a white car. Like, that's a trap. But it was a white car and there was like a black scuff on the back bumper. And I was like, motherfucker, like, when did that happen? But when I had been renting the car, it was dark at nighttime. Yep. And the guy goes, people listening, feel free to just go away and come back in 5 minutes when I finish this. He was like, if you see anything, you're not going to see it now, but if you see anything, just call us in the morning. And I was like, okay, well, whatever. Obviously forgot about that. But when I was trying to find the place that night, I was calling it to try and find the place and I couldn't find it. And then I found it, obviously. Anyway, noticed the dirt, tried to rub it off, couldn't get it off. Fuck. So brought the car back and I said, oh, there's actually a mark on the back bumper. And I tried to call you guys, but nobody answered the phone. Total lie. Nobody answered the phone. And he was like, what number did you call? And I said, oh, the whatever, the number, the office, like the number on Google. So the guy comes out and he's looking at the car at me and he goes, oh, have you got like, he goes, have you got proof of the call? And I said, yeah. And he goes, oh, can I see it? And I was like, yeah. So I started like scrolling through my phone. I was like, oh, I can't find it. And then he goes, what we'll do is we'll charge you anyway and then you can appeal it and then just show the proof of the call on the appeal. So I was like, fuck, okay. So on the plane back, I had called my wife at 9 a.m. on Saturday morning. Uh-huh. So on the plane back, I photoshopped the call to my wife. I photoshopped in the number of the place that I had called on the Friday night. And then that was my only piece of evidence. So the guy was like, why didn't you take a picture of it? And I was like, sure, what good is a photograph? And he was like, well, there's a timestamp on a photograph. And so in my head, I was like, well, that would have been worse evidence than the evidence I currently don't have. So this went on, right? They charged me. It was £150 or £180 or something. It was about, $250 for the car. Yeah. They charged me £1,500 to fix the damage. And I was like, I want to see the bill. Like, I want to see the invoice that's getting fixed. And I was emailing back and forth, and the woman was like, well, we haven't fixed it yet, but that's the cost. And I was like, how do you know that's the cost if you haven't fixed it? I was like, I want to see the invoice before I pay it. And she was like, well, you've already paid it. It was auto-deducted from your card. And I was like, okay, well, I want a refund until it's paid. Until the job is done, then I'll pay them myself. I was like, can I have the number of the place that fixes it? She's like, oh, it's an in-house place. And I was like, look, I have the call. I was told to call and I called. I didn't. I was told to call and I called. I'm not paying this. I tried to tell you about the damage. I didn't. And nobody answered the phone. So what am I supposed to do? So this went on for 8 weeks, right? 8 weeks of emails back and forth. And they refunded the full $1,500, and they gave me a voucher for if I want to use them again. So I, the moral of the story is persistence. Cause they're like you say, it's like, I don't want to deal with that. This person didn't want to deal with it. It was like, what's the easiest way for me to get this off my plate? Cause this guy, like, if I didn't get an email back within 2 hours, I was emailing again saying, I just want to follow up on this real quick. It's like, just wondering if this has been passed up to the supervisor. And like, I was calling, and I remember one day I was on hold for 90 minutes and I just waited.
You just sat.
And then eventually someone picked up the phone and she goes, oh, you're still here. And I was like, yep. It's like, it's 1500 like pounds. I'm not just going to hang up. But yeah, that convinced me that they're just fuckers, that they're just like.
The moral of the story. Yeah. So yeah. One of the things, so real quick, when we would inspect vehicles enterprise, it would be like anything that fit like inside like the size of like a 50 cent piece. So like just a circle like that. If there's scratches, dings, or dents inside there, they probably do have just like a scratch, ding, and dent guy on site that costs like $50 for them to pop it out and do it. And if it's just like a light scuff and no paint transferred, yeah, there's absolutely no reason to charge anything like that. So yeah, just be persistent and fight it.
It was like that size.
Oh yeah, no, that's.
I reckon what they did was they said like, "Ooh, look at this mark here. Right, we better replace the whole body of the car.
The whole panel.
Yeah. It's just like, or they like tried to clean it and accidentally like put their fist through the windscreen and were like, oh, well, that's included in the damage. Yeah, it was crazy. Anyway, there's 5 minutes of your life you're never getting back. There's this is the definition of a 10,000 word essay when you've only written 500 words. I never said therefore. I never said ergo. They're my usual words that I throw into those kind of essays. So yeah, I got my money back anyway. That's the main thing. But the annoying thing was, up until I got the money back, I was like, I've lost money on going to cover this event for this person. Like, they paid me to go over. I rented the car out of my own money to make it easier for them, so they didn't have to pay it. And now I'm down. I was like, I've lost 400% of what I, or whatever. I can't remember the exact percentage, but I remember being like, that's a lot more than I was actually paid to come here.
Yeah, that's a hell of an investment.
Yeah. So you took, what did you say, a 50% pay cut when you left there to coach?
Yeah, I was doing decent at the time there. I was managing a couple offices. I just got, I got completely burnt out. Like, the days there were long. Like, some offices you'd be there from like 6 a.m. They're like 11 to 12 hour days because you have to open up before people go to work so they can rent cars before, and then stay open after so they can return cars after. And I got to a point where I was just completely burnt out. My now wife at the time, who was my girlfriend then, like fully supporting the decision. Like, we were living together. I was like, I don't know what this is going to look like financially. But she was like all about it. She told me to go for it, give it a shot and see what would happen. And thankfully it all kind of worked out in the long run. And now I've been dragging her all over the country. Unfortunately, like, we moved here when she was 5 months pregnant, like, bought a house for the first time, moved across country, and just completely injected as much chaos into our lives as I possibly could at a time when you don't want to have chaos injected into your life. Yeah,
I don't know. I think, to be honest, I think this is, for most people, when you're having your first kid is when chaos just tends to find its way into your life anyway, before you've had, like, regardless of what's it, like, we bought a house just before, or we were in the process of buying a house just before our first arrival. Like, yeah, I don't know. I think people, because it's obvious, it's a very, most people anyway, you've just kind of finished like a transitional kind of stage or whatever.
Yeah.
And then you're like, all right, like, time to get nesting or whatever. So you're probably going to be buying a house, or you're probably just got married, or you're probably just like, there's always loads of shit going on. And as well, like 5 months, I mean, off, like, there's not much happening then really anyway. It's just like, you're looking bigger, you know, like, there's not a whole lot of stuff going on. It's kind of like, you know, when you're getting married and you feel like it's the same with the baby. You're probably in that stage now where things are ramping back up, similar to when it's about 2 weeks before the wedding and there's loads of jobs to do. But there's a dead period. You get engaged and it's like, oh, we need to do all this stuff. And then nothing happens. And you're like, should we be doing something? Or like, are we meant to be? And it's the same when the baby is coming. You're like, holy shit, we're pregnant. Whoa, 9 months, our whole lives are going to change. Nothing happens for like 3 months. Then you get the all clear that like, yeah, baby's going to be fine probably. Yep. So it's like, cool, better buy some shit. Like, you know, need a cot and whatever else. And then nothing happens again. And then about 2 weeks before the baby comes, you get that anxious feeling of like, should I be painting? Should I knock down a wall? Should I do something? Should we buy a new car? Like, it's like,
it's you just feel so everything you just said, we have done. When we moved here, the place needed a lot more work than we thought, just because we bought it sight unseen, just looking at pictures and stuff. We got here, holes and walls have been filled. Every room has been painted. Floors have been torn up and laid down. Everything's been painted. Just had to buy a new car yesterday. Because we just had like, we were sharing one Jeep because we sold mine in Boston. So, but like, thankfully I have her because I'm very much a, like in the moment, what's right in front of me type of person. And she is much more of a planner, that has kept us like on track to actually have all the things that we need for this baby to actually come home alive. But yeah, it's been a journey.
Do you know if it's a boy or a girl?
You don't say we do not. We are waiting to find out.
And have you got like lists of names?
We do. We have the two that whichever way it goes, either or, we're gonna go with. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah. That's something we're struggling with at the minute. We have like like 5 weeks or so, depending. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we're kind of struggling with names a bit.
This is number three for you, right?
Yeah, and so now it has to match or like sound normal. You know what I mean? You can't just have like we have Sloan and Bodie, so you can't just call it like Sue or Tom. You know, like it has to be a slightly off kilter kind of name, without being weird. And I think I'm still in that stage of like suggesting annoyingly stupid names. You know, like names that I know won't be picked. Like I keep suggesting, I'm still in that. I've been in that stage for about 4 months. So my wife is probably closer to divorce than ever, but. I don't know, when I don't have a decent idea, I'm like, right, I might as well make a joke, so I'll just suggest like Rudiger or whatever. The joke would be on me if she accepts one of them.
I approach a lot of those things the same way. Like sometimes she's like, we don't need to joke right now. Like I guess it's just how I naturally handle things that I don't understand.
There is no other way. Okay, there's Augustus is a good name. I don't want him to be bullied. Morpheus. My neighbor's kids are San Carla and Bryce. San Carla.
That would be the most least Irish name that I think. But you could go Aaron. You could keep it really Irish.
Oh, fuck that. I hate that stuff. Like, I don't mind other people doing it, but it's just, I hate like Porrick or, you know, like I just hate the, yeah, I really don't like those. Gus is actually a great name. I always thought Gus would be a great name for a pug. If you have a pug dog and you call it Gus, that's a great name for a pug. No offense, Augustus. I don't mean that your name is, I'm not calling you, but I don't know what I'm saying. Imagine if I'm Mexican. Just like no connection whatsoever. But it was just like, this is Sloan, this is Bodie, this is Javier Garcia. It's just like,
this is for no reason. Yeah. Javier O'Connor.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. So when you moved to Comtrain then, that's like, different, because if you're kind of helping some people out, you're doing your affiliate coaching, you're helping some people out and you're doing some progressions and stuff, maybe some one-on-one stuff, and then you go to Comtrain, it's like, oh, this is actually like a facility that, you know, like has actual professional athletes coming here regularly and stuff. Was that like a big adjustment then?
Yeah, it was pretty cool. So when I was at the gym in Baltimore, I had one athlete who was entry level semifinals regionals level athlete. So this was in sanctionals time as well. So she went to a few events there. So had a chance to work with her in 2020 when they did the national champions to the games. I had a friend of mine who lived in town from a country over in Europe, and she actually qualified for the games that year. So I was able to get a little bit of a taste and a look behind the curtain a little bit at that, what that level of competition looks like there, and really kind of learn the early parts of that craft at that level. But then going to comp train and working with Harry at the time and Ben, and all I wanted to do was get myself in the room during those training sessions to just kind of see what that looks like at that level with those athletes and learn as much as I can from Harry and Ben and the way that they handled that. So at first I just told him, I was like, hey, I'll just take splits. Like, I'll just walk around with the whiteboard. I'll take times and splits and set up cameras or whatever else it needed to be on top of the other responsibilities I had there, which was working on like the app programming and doing coaches notes and coaching, like the general community at large, online. And then, from there got the chance to work with a few athletes at semifinals that first year, and worked with some age group athletes at the games when I first got there. So kind of just started to get the idea of what that looks like from just like a program design standpoint, what is appropriate training volume and loading for those athletes, and just see how those training sessions went. And then was able to kind of work with an athlete here and there. Got to work with Sid at one point, worked with Kendall Vincelette early on as well, and just kind of slowly built it from there.
Harry is, I've seen like pictures of him and stuff. When you meet him in person, he's fucking intimidating. Like, he's a brick shit house, like massive.
He makes no sense either, because so when I was there, like, I no joke, in the time I was there with him, I probably saw him work out 24 times. The guy he walks around. He's this jacked, shredded, just incredibly kind dude. But yeah, no, he's built out of granite.
He reminds me of, what the fuck is that show? You know, that Jack Reacher, you know, the new, like, he's like him. He's just like constantly carrying carpets, but like also somehow looks unassuming, but you know, he'd rip both your arms off and shove them up your ass. Like, without question.
100%. Harry's great. I learned a lot from him. He was a really, really sharp dude as well. But yeah, like, he's the guy that if he has your back and you're on his team, like, he will have your back for the rest of your life. And but at the same time, like you said, also like the kindest, most unassuming person. But you go to shake his hand and you get next to him or give him like a pat on the back, and you're like, guy's impenetrable.
Yeah. I remember I was talking to him. He was over here for 50-150, and I was talking to him. I can't remember what I was talking to him about, but he was kind of walking through the thing, and he's like, oh, walk with me. And I was like, okay. And he started walking, and I was like jogging. Like, I was like basically like running alongside him, and he was just like walking normal speed for him. And I was just like, fucking hell, Larry. Yeah, he's fucking massive. So when you, I'm curious from your perspective then, so in the time that you were there, Comtrain started kind of ramping up into this, like, we're going to be a professional facility, we're going to have like live-in athletes, we're going to like pay our athletes, it's going to be this big like hub of, you know, I don't know, athlete betterment or whatever. And then It's kind of ramping up towards that. Then it changed, it kind of stood a bit and Harry left, and then it kind of seemed to change more, and then it just kind of ran aground and just kind of hit a bit of an iceberg or whatever. For you being part of that, and when that has to be a bit of a roller coaster of like, oh man, this is so exciting, and we're at the frontmost of like what's happening in the sport, to then suddenly being like, oh cool, it's all gone and it's not what we thought it was going to be at all.
Yeah, it was different. It was something that I had told people for the longest time that, and I knew, like, just working with a small business, how unrealistic it is. Like, I always said, like, if everything were to go great and work out well, like, I would love to retire here. Like, to be in the space, to be able to do the thing I love to do, and in a part of the country that we really enjoyed. Like, we enjoyed the Northeast. Like, we liked the snow. We liked the rocky coastline. It was just a really nice spot to live. But, yeah, just, like, over the course of a few years, just – the direction and the main focus of the company just shifted and adjusted a little bit, which caused what everyone saw. And there was no hard feelings either way. Like, I understood like small businesses will change and adjust and maneuver to do what they need to do. But yeah, it was certainly different, but I was lucky enough to still have a space carved out there where I could continue to do the thing that I wanted to do and work with the athletes that I was working with and still try to drive that Comtrain brand and that company and that team as far forward as I possibly could, which was dope. And I learned a lot of stuff while I was there, and I still am good friends with everyone there, and Ben and KJ and everyone. And it was a cool time.
When Harry left, because I noticed, like, maybe I'm like reading too much into it, but when you started talking about going to Comtrain first, on I think two, maybe three separate occasions, you said Harry's name first. When you were listing people, was he like, when he left, was that a body blow? Like, was that hard to take?
Well, he was the initial person that hired me. So, and he was the person who I like worked most closely with, initially while he was there. Like there was a small office where it was, Dan, Harry, Tori, and myself. And that was kind of like the small space that I was working with mostly. And then, yeah, when he left, it was definitely unfortunate, and I didn't love it because he was such a nice dude. He was just a great person that you wanted to spend more time around. But I think he got to a point where he just, and I don't want to speak for him, just like started to get a little burnt out himself and just wanted to take a step back and do his own thing for a while and step away from the space. And then found an opportunity to kind of hop back in and work with his old athletes again and do his thing.
When you saw him pop back up, were you pissed off? Like, were you like, motherfucker?
No, he actually reached out. I had coffee with him a couple times up there after he had like stepped away and taken a break. He had reached out to everyone up at the team and like sent us all like each an email to just like kind of say what he was doing.
Don't hate me, but
yeah, but no, it was fine. I mean, it was a little surprising for sure, but I mean, there is no room or need to have any hard feelings for anyone in this space because it's such a small community. Everyone's going to cross paths with everyone on such a frequent occasion every year once the season starts ramping up. So to be upset or worried about what someone else is going to do because of what they feel is best for them is just silly when we can just put all that focus and attention into what we want to do and building the thing that we want to build. And I still get excited to see Harry and even Jake and all the guys at HWPO whenever we're going around and stuff. So no, zero hard feelings at all, but it was definitely unfortunate to not just have him around anymore.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, even if you were pissed off at him, you'd say you wouldn't. Like I would. I'd be like, oh, Harry, great guy. You know, just constant, like...
That's why you can't see it, but I'm sitting facing the door.
Yeah. What about when Ben decided to step away then and wasn't going to focus on competitive coaching anymore, and then Cole was announced as like his successor and he was taking over? Because I think when that news broke, I found it interesting because I guess I was surprised that it happened, that Ben was like, you know what, I'm finished. That kind of surprised me a bit. But I was also surprised that it wasn't you that took over, because from my perspective, and you know, you can correct me on any of this, but from my perspective, for like from the time Harry left, it appeared to me from the outside looking in that it was like Ben and you were up front and that you guys were kind of sharing the athletes amongst yourselves and like mm-hmm. working together on like bringing everyone forwards or whatever. So then I guess I assume when he stepped back, that it would just be you moving into that foremost position or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think Cole caught me out because I was like, oh, right. Like, didn't have him pegged as a coach, kind of thought Jarrett was the natural successor. Is that accurate from your perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I think anyone who has any sort of ambition or wants to take the next step in their career would have wanted that to happen. And for sure, it would have been a cool thing to do. The other side of that coin is like working with Cole was awesome. Like Cole, for anyone who's got to spend time with him, is probably one of the most genuinely nice people you will ever meet. He's precisely who he presents himself to be in public, in private, which was really, really cool. And the other thing, whenever he would come out to Boston, even though he does train by himself in his garage all the time, He very much is someone who is a coach at heart and wants to be a coach at heart and is a student of the sport and knows his stuff pretty well. So it's like if you have like in American football, you have like an offensive coordinator and a defensive coordinator, and the head coach steps down. One of those two is going to get the job. In that case, it was Cole, and that was dope. And then I got to see an opportunity for a position to open up here at Proven, which allowed me to kind of just take that next role and that next step and just come down here. But yeah, I mean, initially I was hoping that I would have had the chance to run that ship, but after a day of just sitting back and thinking about it, all was good.
When did the fact that he got that, or maybe more so that you didn't get that, push you to look at other opportunities like Proven and other things that you might not have like considered before that?
Yeah, so I don't think it was directly that. I don't think it was directly like, oh, well, if it's not happening here, I need to go find it happen somewhere else. It was more of a thing, well, okay, what is the reason that it wasn't me? Like, what is something that I need to be better at or improve on or do differently in order to get to a position where I can be trusted with that? So I kind of just took a step back to kind of look at it from that perspective. And while I was doing that and doubling down on my athletes and everything that I could control and everything I could do there, this opportunity popped up and I just kind of reached out just to kind of test the waters and chat with Nick over here and see what that was about. And thankfully the conversations went well with him and with Shane, and it was an opportunity that I just could not pass up after I got to know more about them and kind of how they wanted to build this thing here, and all of the ideas and things that they wanted to do here just lined up so perfectly with how I wanted to see a camp run or coach athletes. It was a really, really perfect combination for what they wanted versus what I wanted to do.
Had Comtrain moved away from that totally then, from your perspective, like that kind of, because the focus was obviously, like, comp is in the name, the focus is obviously like competition when you joined and when you were there, and that was what the atmosphere was kind of being built around, and the athletes were coming in and you were doing your split times and all that shit, and then you were taking over like coaching athletes and stuff. And then Ben seemed to shift his focus towards like Gen Pop and like, how can we reach as many people as possible, and how can we, you know, kind of, I guess, CrossFit methodology more so than CrossFit sport, kind of was where his focus seemed to shift. Was that like when you saw Proven and when you like, were you like, oh, this is kind of what I thought that the next 10 years at Comtrain were going to look like, so now I actually have an opportunity to, like, had your role changed or had it become harder to do what you wanted to do with the likes of like Lucy or Sydney or whoever in Boston?
Yeah, luckily I was still able to kind of do that thing up there with them. And even after the focus started to shift a little bit up there, I kind of look at it as like all pro sports have to retool and reorganize. So even though some of the high name athletes just weren't part of the team up there or part of the camp, I saw it more as like a challenge to try and rebuild this thing and rebuild it around a Sydney, a Caroline, a Lucy, all young, really talented athletes to just kind of retool the cupboard up there and kind of push this thing forward. But yeah, then when I chatted with them here, and then the resources that they're putting into this, like this new facility, I was talking to them when this was all like in the background starting to be put together. So the chance to come here, be a part of this as they're rebuilding this thing and be in this completely dedicated space to really, really push this. And then the other side of that coin is everyone wants to know like what Tia does and Shane do behind the scenes in order for that success to be there. So to get to come here and do that and peek behind the curtain and then learn from Shane now, it's been pretty cool.
Has there been anything since you started there where you're like, oh shit, that's totally different from what I was thinking before now?
Not necessarily that. I think the longer you're in the space, you realize all the coaches do something similar. It's just everyone has a different type of focus or emphasis on what they put their time into. The one big difference I have noticed here, and it's not like it wasn't attention to detail up there, because There's a lot of things that Ben really would leave no stone unturned, but the attention to detail on everything here is just ramped up on the facility, the care of the facility, the attention to the athletes. Like, it is an extremely high level of attention to detail in everything that they do here, which has been pretty cool.
Who pushes that the most, do you think?
It comes from Shane and Tia, without a doubt. So Shane is I don't think a lot of people really get to know him. He doesn't do a ton. He's not like out there a lot. He's not speaking a lot. You get some stuff on behind the scenes. We have a podcast now that we put out, which is cool. So people get to know him. But Shane is like an incredibly genuine and endearing person, but at the same time has very high standards for himself, for his facility, for his company, and for his athletes. And it's this really nice blend of caring about the people that's around him, but also holding everyone to a high standard, but knowing that it comes from a good spot. And Tia carries that as well, as much as anyone. It's just, she holds herself to a standard, and that is contagious. And she expects the entire place to be held to a certain standard as well. And it really is infectious for everyone that's here.
This thumbnail, I just find it hilarious. Nick's expression of just like, that's the look that like my wife frequently gives me, or that people often give me, where it's just like, why don't you just shut the fuck up?
So that is Nick. Like, you've talked to him. Like, he is a very Nick is a very straightforward type of person. He will not sugarcoat anything. He will just tell you exactly what the thing is, and that look epitomizes that.
Yeah, it's cool. Okay, I want to talk about Lucy. So you've coached Lucy for 2 years?
Yeah, this is our second full season.
Okay. And when you guys started working with her, was that like was there a bit of a tug of war there? Was there like other people interested, or like how'd you end up working with her?
So I don't know. I would imagine that she was having conversations. I would imagine she was having other conversations. I do know that she hopped on a call or two with Ben before she decided to work with Comptrain. And then Ben and I flew out there like a month after she wanted to work with us to just go meet her and see her in person for the first time. And then from there, yeah, I started working with her one-on-one from that moment on. And yeah, it's been pretty cool.
She's quite young. Like, it's weird for me, especially because when you see this, like when you see someone standing on a podium, when you see someone going to, yeah, like obviously this wasn't like a super serious competition, but like that's a strong group of individuals, and there was other like just as strong groups of individuals there. And yeah, at no point did she look in any way out of place. She didn't look like she didn't belong. She wasn't like losing the run of herself or getting overawed, yeah, or like freaking out or whatever. And it was the same, like I'll never be able to find it here now, but there was another competition like before you guys started working together where it was like Black Box up in Belfast on a Friday night. And it was like Petey Savage, Emma McQuaid, Mickey Smith, her, I think there was someone else there as well. Maybe Sam Stewart, I'm not sure. Like all, you know, recognized names in the sport and like very strong names in Irish CrossFit. And she was like fucking 12 or something. Like she was like, you know, essentially an unfertilized ovary at the time. And she totally held her own, didn't look out of place at all. Is that the case? Like when you're working with athletes like this in the sport, because a lot of your athletes are like quite young females. So yeah, is your experience like, is that a common trait in all of them? Or do you think, is that something that Lucy has, like a skill that she has in spades more so than other athletes?
For what was a 16-year-old in that picture just turned 17. I think that is very much a her thing. Not that other young athletes and teens don't have that, but I do think that's a something that does make her special. So speaking of like how we started working with her, the initial phone calls that she had with Ben, like it wasn't like mom and dad were on the call and she was talking. She handled all of those conversations on her own. So she's a, I don't know if it's something in the Northern Ireland air that you guys have up there, or if it's just enough like potatoes that you guys take down and stuff, but like she's a really wildly mature person for her age, and the way that she handles herself and the way that she has like this dedication to the thing that she does. But the other side of that, she's still just now a 17-year-old kid, basically. But she doesn't carry herself that way. She doesn't act that way when she's at these events. Her ability to just be who she is, I think it really is unique to her. And I think it is a big part of why she's had the success that she's had so far.
And you have, so you have her, what age is Caroline? She's like 20,
20? 24.
Okay. And Sydney's like similar, 23.
24. 24. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
When you see people like Mal and Emma Carey and
Emma Lawson,
someone else. I'm thinking of the people who have withdrawn Haley. From the sport. Haley, and well, I guess now she's back, but there was someone else recently. Chloe Wilson. They're all like similar like vintage of female athlete. Yeah. Like when you see those people kind of step back, does that make like, do you reassess and think like, oh shit, I need to check that these are okay, or I need to like, does it make you doubt anything that you're doing with them? Does it make you doubt their place in the sport, or if the sport is for them, or any of that kind of stuff? Like,
yeah, no, I don't think that last piece, I don't think so at all. I do not think that it doubts their place in the sport, or if there is a space for them, or if there's a sport for them. What it does, it makes me feel good about the way that I coach athletes. Part of the thing that I really enjoy about coaching athletes is the connection that I get to make with people. Like, I really get to know the athletes that I work with. We have conversations that exist outside of thrusters and pull-ups and rowing and burpees, and really help especially these young athletes become the best possible versions of themselves and know how to handle and manage expectations of things that are going to come along the way, how to define success for themselves, how to understand why they compete, why they train, and just give enough information and help them build enough tools to be able to manage all of the stuff that comes within the sport. And I think that if you don't do that, and you don't take the time, not just with young female athletes, with male athletes as well, that we have a sport of athletes that are walking around terrified because of just how hard the sport is, and that they only get one opportunity a year in reality, which is semifinals, to really go out there and perform their sport to hopefully get to the ultimate part of the games. And when everyone gets to the games, like, everyone feels great there. It's just like getting there is the thing, but everyone walks up to semifinals absolutely terrified that if something doesn't go right, maybe I won't get this sponsorship. Maybe the sponsorship will drop me. Maybe my fans aren't going to like me. Maybe the people are going to criticize the way I move on. Like, they chase all these things. They do it so publicly. And especially for the female athletes, they're receiving way more criticism and comments and all of the things you can imagine, far more so than the guys are. So like, it's so important to me to be a person that can help them manage and navigate these waters as best possible, so that way that all those things don't happen, that they don't want to step away from the sport, that they don't end up hating the thing that they loved when they first got into it in the first place. And just finding the balance between enjoying training and not letting all the overwhelming expectations and pressure and eyeballs like push them out of the thing that they love to do.
How do you mean women get more comments than men? What, like, do you mean commentators? Do you mean like comments on posts or on live streams, or?
Yeah, all of the above. I mean, if you go to any female's post on Instagram and look at the comment section versus any male's post on Instagram, look at the comment section, you're going to get a completely different type of response from the public, whether, and not all of them are good. Like, female athletes just get asked on a regular if they're on steroids and get critiqued far more often than male athletes do. And that's pretty true across all sports. So it's no surprise to me that it's been mostly female athletes that have had decided to take a step away, because I think there's a lot more to it than just they're young females doing a sport. There's more to it than that.
Yeah, I think as well though, it's kind of there's a difference between, like, you know, massive broad strokes coming, just brace yourself. But there's a difference, like, even the way I handle problems and the way my wife handles problems, like, she reacts, tends to react much more emotionally, or will want to, like, talk and, like, verbalize things and name things and, mm-hmm. like, you know, like, talk through her day at work or whatever. Yeah. Whereas I come home and she'll say, like, oh, how was work? And I'll say, yeah, fine. And then that's fully it. Like, that's fully my whole, like, yeah. That's it. The weight has been lifted off my shoulders of, like, I've said it was fine. And if something funny yeah. has happened, I'll talk about it. You know, that kind of way. But yeah, I think, like, it's probably just a DNA thing as well. For a lot of it is just, like, how people internalize things or how people process things or how people, you know, I don't know. And then I suppose the other thing is, like, female athletes also get those, you know, English is my second language and I want to give you a compliment comments from, like, random guys in India, where it's like, yeah. hello, my pretty princess or whatever. Like, yeah. So swings and roundabouts, I guess, you know, like, how much for feet pics? I never get asked that, you know, like, no, if I was a woman, I might get asked that at least once a year.
I think Kiefer with Underdogs gets that question about once a week, though. But to back up to your other point about how, like you were saying, like, how the difference between men and women and how they just kind of, like, just discuss things that happen. I do absolutely think that that is a thing where they're going to handle situations and want to verbalize it and talk things out and have the space in order to explore the emotions and what it is. And I think part of what's important is letting them know that it's okay to have those thoughts, feelings, emotions, give them an outlet to express those things so they can talk through it, so that the things don't get bottled up. Because if they don't have this space or a person that they trust or a coach to be able to talk through those things and be able to work through those and navigate those emotions, then that can cause someone to have everything bottle up, feel like it's overwhelming, and then just throw their hands there and go, I just need to step back. I need to step away for a moment. So one of the things that I really, really try to do, specifically working with, again, like, the majority female athletes I work with, is having those conversations, letting them know it's okay to have those thoughts, feelings, and emotions, not to put any, like, judgment to them at all, just to have them come, have those conversations, and know that all that's okay. And typically when we do that and we do it well, out the other side of that is a perfectly calm, confident, and comfortable athlete that wants to get back to doing their thing.
Did you notice more of those conversations happening after Mal and Emma and the others stepped away, or was it just the same?
Pretty much the same, but it did. I'd be foolish to say it didn't shine more of a light on making sure that I continued to keep up with it, for sure.
Yeah. Is it easier with saying it?
Go on. I was going to say, I feel bad that, and I would never want to assume, the other side is, I would never want to assume that those conversations weren't being had with those other athletes before they stepped away, because I'm not in the room. I would never want to assume that I know what's going on in the room there, just like I would never want someone to assume that they know what's going on in the room here with what we're doing. But I do find that having those conversations and doing those things help mitigate those things and allow these athletes to be able to express themselves, get it out, and manage it better moving forward.
Is it easier with Lucy when she has her parents and stuff and, like, lives at home and that, like, or though, is it, like, is that job almost taken care of for you?
So Lucy's parents are awesome. I think the other thing that, and I don't know what it is, it's just, it might be just a cultural difference. Like, Lucy doesn't do the Instagram thing as much as a lot of other people do. So I don't know if she's, it's just not a thing that interests her to do that in the degree that you see a lot with over here in the States. So I do think it's a cultural thing as well, probably, with Lucy. And her parents are great. Like, they do keep everything very grounded, and with the way that they treat her. They don't, like, it's not like over here, like, Friday Night, like, football parents, where they're, like, absolutely bloodthirsty crazy about their kid being a professional athlete. It's just like, no, they enjoy getting to see Lucy do the thing that she loves to do, and they travel around the world and they get to do it with her. So no, her parents are great, and they help a massive part in this as well.
Yeah, I don't know. I've seen Nicola berate and scream at Lucy. No, I'm joking. That's a joke. That's a joke.
Zero chance of that. And she also has a support system of friends in high school. So, 'cause she's still in high school. She, like, and we still talk, and she'll still check. She'll be like, is it good if I go to a concert this weekend? I'm like, yes, absolutely. Go to a concert. And she just hangs out with her friends. So she has these two separate worlds where she spends a lot of time in the gym doing the thing, and she's an absolute animal in there. But when she steps out, none of her friends, like, none of them know anything about it. They just, like, if she goes to the games and she comes dead last, they'll be like, oh, that's so cool that you got to go to the States and do that thing. Like, they're so oblivious to it. So she gets to have this separation of life from CrossFit when she's with her other friends at school.
Jeffrey's asking, remind me, oh, great mustache. Remind me, who all does Jarrett coach? So Lucy McGonigal, who... she's still in the age bracket to go teenage if she wants to, but I'm guessing with school and stuff, she might not. Is that accurate, or do you know?
Yeah, this would be her last year that she would qualify to be a teen athlete. And we'll just see how the year goes and what that looks like.
Yeah. did it take any of the shine off it when it wasn't going to be like the games, like when it was going to be separate?
Yeah, I don't think anyone that, if you were lucky enough to compete at the games as an age group athlete in Madison, it was pretty cool. From what I understand, the people at the pit and these other events, they do it at a really high level. I've never got the chance to go before. From what I heard, they're also doing it at a different venue, I think, which will be pretty cool. So I'd imagine it's going to be pretty neat, but it was also very cool as an age group athlete to be able to work out on the same floor in Madison that you see at the games. So I don't know.
I think it'll only be an issue for like 2 years. Like the next crop of teenagers come up, they won't ever know what it was like. You know, it's kind of like the price of a fucking bottle of water or something. If you, like, you and I will give out about it, but like in a couple of years time, my daughter's buying one, she's gonna be like, this is just normal, right? You know, there's nothing.
Much the damn thing was, it was absurd.
What about Caroline then? So she was, this her rookie year at the games?
Yeah, last year was her first year. So I started working with Caroline after the season was over the year before. So last year was my first full year working with her. And she was cool. She was very fun. So last year was her first year at the games. Was her third year at semis and her first time cracking through.
She has, I don't know why it caught me so by surprise, but she has like the most American accent.
she has the thickest Southern accent of anyone in the space. If she ever, I was so disappointed when she won an event or a heat at the games last year. And I was like, if she gets on the mic, like everyone's like gonna, their ears are gonna perk up. They're gonna like be completely shocked when they hear her talk. But like, she's from a really small town in North Carolina. Her parents own a farm, and yeah, she rocks. Caroline is an absolute incredible athlete and a workhorse, but yeah, she's real sweet.
That face.
Yeah, she's also one of the most competitive people I've ever met in my entire life. I think I sent her a video of me doing crossover double unders to kind of show her some technique, and she got mad that I could do them and she couldn't, and then 30 minutes later, she had them down.
She showed up on Savan's behind the scenes. Yeah. And it was like in a athlete briefing or something, and she was up in the stands, and he like talked to her, and he asked, I can't remember what he asked her, but he asked her like a one word question, and she said something, didn't think anything of it, and then she said something else, and I was like, hold up. I was like,
that's different.
Yeah, that's not the voice or not the accent I was expecting to come out. She seems really cool though. I like her. That's her pet, is it? And then you also coach Sydney would be your other common household name. That's the word I'm looking for. She was demo team last year, was she? Last year.
She was, yeah. She had a injury creep up out of nowhere before semis that kind of threw off her build a little bit and just had a little rough shot at semis last year, but was able to do demo last year and loved it.
And she was in Madrid as well. I met her in Madrid in like whatever that was, October. Yeah. She was on Noah's team. And was there a consideration that she would go team this year? No.
No, she is fully committed to being an individual athlete for the foreseeable future. She just got the invite from Chan and Noah and to go over to Madrid and do it. And yeah, she had a blast. But right now, she says I forget to tell someone on the floor what I'm about to do when I'm working out, and I realize that's very important in the team atmosphere. So no, she much rather prefers to do indie right.
Yeah, that's cool. She seems cool.
She's great. She's awesome.
You don't answer this if you don't want to, because it's long and he didn't pay for it. Jared, how do you /proven incorporate? Oh, two slashes. How do you /proven incorporate analytics /performance? You know, this guy is a math nerd. Analytics /performance metrics to guide training beyond hit this time for your intervals today. He didn't even put in a question mark. What a dick.
So I don't answer it then?
You can answer it. Just don't answer it enthusiastically.
We utilize a couple different things. We have a couple of tools and different metrics that we use here when we're measuring stuff. We have a couple of wearables that we use to kind of guide and adjust different training metrics that we're using here. So yes, without going into too much detail, yes, there's a bunch of different things that we use in training, and it's different for each athlete as well. Like for some athletes, they really enjoy having more data around their training and letting that be a guide for adjusting the training. There's other athletes that just don't want to dive into all of that. It's overwhelming to think about all the other metrics behind it, and we go that route with them. So it really just depends on the athlete, what path we take more with one than the other, if that makes sense.
Is it stressful? Because if you're there, like when you're there now and nobody else is there, as in like Colton's not in town, Lucy's not in town, everyone else, are you just like looking after Sydney and then she's your sole focus? Or like, are you like, do you coach the affiliate as well? Do you help with like Tia's shit? Like, do you do, you know what I mean? Like, how do you divide up the time if it's just one person that's there?
Yeah. So my role is director of elite athletes here. So I'm officially responsible for all of our team of elite athletes. So overseeing, making sure that they're getting everything they need from their coaches, that basically it all falls on me at the end of the day. Like if something did not go well for a certain reason, it's up to me to kind of figure out what that was, why it was, talk with their individual coach or them and figure out what that is. So on an everyday basis here in town, we have Sid Wells, Luis Oscar Mora, Sid Mikulishin, Tia, and then now up through quarterfinals, Jay Crouch and Maddie Sturter in town. So we have, 6-7 athletes back here every day. And we also have Riley Beebe and RJ Mester here, as well as teen athletes, a couple days a week to come in and do some training. So on the daily basis, like I'm on the floor working with them and working with their coaches. So Dwight here over is the main coach contact for Sid Wells and Luis. And then with Jay, Maddie, and Tia, is Shane. So my role is to ensure that all of our elite athletes, whether in person or remote, feel that they are getting everything they need to feel confident when they step on the floor. So I'm reaching out to our remote athletes every week or so to have conversations just to make sure that's going well. And then I also help on our compete track through like our online programming for our community as well to do workout notes and write programming stuff for that too. So a little bit of everything.
And there's another guy as well. Who's the other guy? Who's like Colton's coach? And
oh, so we also have, yeah, so we have our
Nick Matthew, right?
Remote coaches. So yeah, so Nick Matthew's our remotes, but Colton works with Joey Totora, and then we have Tim Paulson is also another one of our remote coaches now, and Dave Charbonneau, who works with like Marquand Jones and Garrett. So yeah, so we have a really solid stable of coaches that I get to kind of hang out with.
And is like, if I had a spreadsheet now of Sydney Mikulishin's stuff and Jay Crouch's stuff, are they vastly different, or are they the same with like some tweaks towards her, some tweaks towards him?
Yeah, so we try to get them all to come together, especially when they're in person here, and even when they're remote, so we get some data points. We bring them together when it makes sense, but they each have their own individual stuff that they need to work on. So depending on the type of year, it can be 50-50, it can be 70-30. It just depends on the type of year, time of year that we're in. Right now, we're getting them matched up a little bit more as we get closer to the season to get them to kind of ramp it up a little bit as we go. But each athlete has their own individual stuff, but we do mold the training to bring them together a couple times a week as well.
Okay. So like Metcons might be similar, but accessory stuff might be different or whatever.
Accessory stuff is the big one where it's always, where it, not always, where it's going to be adjusted. So if one athlete needs to work on handstand pushups and the other one needs to work on rope climbs, we kind of just modify it that way.
It's cool. Barclay heard me say spreadsheet. Hide your erection, sir. that's cool. Jay and Matty are there until quarterfinals. That's cool. I knew he was over there for the open announcement, but I don't know. I kind of felt, I suppose I just assumed he'd go back again, but that would be kind of stupid, I guess, to go back.
Yeah, that'd be a really quick turnaround. No, yeah. Jay and Matty are great. Maddie's cool because speaking of like teen athletes, like everyone forgets she was 17 years old at regionals and 18 years old at the games.
So was Jay. Back. Jay was like 12 when he was on team.
I was talking to Jay the other day. I don't think I realized. I was like, how old are you? Jay's 25. The guy's, and he's, the, I think he did, he just finished his 11th open. And I was trying to do the backward math on that. I was like, that doesn't make sense. But yeah, so like Maddie's awesome. She's fit. She's in good shape. She's excited for the season. And Jay is just an absolute animal, man. I was so glad that the way the open announcement worked, that he got to go out there and Sid Wells, but like that he got to go out there and like show the world like who he is and what he can do. And he was sneakily top 10 at the games last year, but I don't think anyone really realized it. He had a huge bump. Yeah.
Like from,
he started working with Shane last year and it just agreed really, really well with him. And they've got a really good relationship. And Jay's demeanor as well. I don't think I've ever talked to him or had a conversation where he's just not smiling and happy all the time. He's just like the nicest guy.
Yeah. He's come into his own a lot as well. Like I had him on the podcast like 2 or 2.5 years ago and it was fine. Like, you know, nothing amazing, nothing terrible either. It was fine. And then I had him on when he was in Nashville before the games and he was just so much more relaxed and like conversational and just himself, like just, you know, confident in himself. That comes with time as well, like, but I think he knew that he was where he deserved to be and that he was like, he was excited to show off, I think, and he did, which is great. it's great. It's cool for her because was it a back injury she had last year?
Who's that, Sid or Maddie?
Maddie. She had some kind of injury, I think. So. Yeah. And so she's feeling good.
Yeah, she's fit. She's in a good spot. She had a good open too. So she's in a good spot. So I'm excited to see what she does this year again.
I also feel like people like her, you know, when Ellie Turner pulls out, I'm sure there's Australian athletes that are like, oh no, shit. Like, you know, like pretending to be like, oh, oof.
We've got another female athlete down there. Her name's Briny, who's a fit lady.
How do you say her surname? Chalice.
Briny Chalice, I believe. Yeah.
Chalice. Okay, right. Okay.
But yeah, she's a fit lady. She was third in quarterfinals in Oceania last year. So just trying to connect a few more dots to turn that quarterfinals into semifinals. But she's a fit lady too. She'll go down there and she'll make some noise.
Let's go. I need to call. I did a workout before this.
How'd it go?
And it was you can tell. I've coughed like nonstop. I loosened up a lot of shit like in my lungs, I think. I'm doing 100 burpees a day. So I did I remember at the start JR was like, oh, I did 8 minute AMRAP. No, 8 minute EMOM. The first 7 minutes is 12 burpees, and then the last minute you do 16. And I was like, oh, I'll fucking never be able to do that. Like, that's not happening. So now, what are we, like 3 months in? Now I can do it no problem. It's fine. I mean, bit of a problem, but it's still fine. So then today I was like, oh, I had planned on doing like a 40-minute EMOM so that I could get 200 burpees done, so I'd have tomorrow's burpees done today because I'm going away tomorrow. But my kids honestly, it's like you'll know this soon enough. It's like the kids have this kind of sixth sense of like, he's planning an activity while I'm resting. So I need to be a dick about going to bed. So like my daughter was like kicking the wall, my son was kicking the end of his cot, and I went like, they're going to their grandparents' house tomorrow, and went into my son, the most hollow threat I think I've ever made in my life, because he needs to go there tomorrow or I don't get to go away with my wife. So I went in and I was like, if you don't stop making noise, we won't be able to let you go to Granny and Granddad's house. And like, he looked at me like, bitch, we both know that's happening.
Yeah.
So yeah, my 40-minute AMRAP became 16. So I did 12 calorie bike erg and 12 burpees the first 14 minutes or whatever number of minutes, and then the last minute of each I did 16 and 16. 12, 12, 12, 12, 12 all the way up of bike erg and burpees, and then I did 16 bike and 16 burpees. It was fucking awful.
No, that's good. That's an old comp train workout called Fortitude, where it's like the goal, it's 30 minutes off and on. You try, the goal is to get to 20. Like, the elites will do 20 burpees and 20 cal row alternating minutes for 30 minutes. Some of the, like Chan and them, would go 22, 23 of each, and it's absolutely absurd. I think the most I've ever got was 14 across, and it was awful.
Yeah, I remember Hiller sent it to me in like November. I must do it again, actually, because it was before I started doing burpees, and it was roar on burpees, and he I don't think he said 20. I think he lowered it because he knew. I think he lowered it. I think it's half an hour, and I made it to like 26 minutes or something, or 24 minutes or something, whatever. It definitely wasn't 20 that he said. I think it might have been like 16 and 16 or something, or 12 and 12 or something.
So good. Yeah.
I must do that again. So plans then for the rest. So do you get to take like paternity leave? I see Shane has Willow in the gym like all the time. So does that set the bar of like, what do you mean paternity leave?
No, luckily they've been really, really good. So yeah, I'll get a couple of weeks of paternity leave to be home, especially since we're here. Like, we're out on an island, basically. Like, we have no family near here at all, so
okay,
it'll be good. But yeah, Willow's dope. Willow's such a cool, chill little kid. Like, she just has the run of this place. They just kind of turn her loose and she just goes all over the place. She's adventurous. But yeah, I'll get a couple weeks, be home with the wife, and enjoy that time, and then I'll probably be back right as or right before quarterfinals kicks off to do that.
As timing goes, I would suggest maybe re-looking, if you're having a second child, maybe just rethink your timing. This is piss poor. Although I also fall into this category where they announced when semifinals were for Europe, like that, I was like, oh, it's in Lyon and this, like, whatever, 20th or whatever of May. And I screenshot and sent it to my wife, and she wrote back, absolutely not, due on the 25th. It's just like, okay, fuck me.
Yeah. I mean, the timing, like, even so for all that, so I was at all three semifinals last year, Europe, East, and West. It's probably going to work out that way again this year. So it's like, certainly not ideal, 6 weeks, 8 weeks in or whatever it's going to be to pick up and go. So I'm going to have to pick up the slack on the front and back end of that for sure.
Yeah. We're kind of at different stages though as well, because it's your first child, your child might resent you for leaving, but now because it's my third child, I'm going to resent my child for not being able to go before it can even speak or move.
Yeah, no, that's a different type of trauma you're going to put on that kid early. Yeah. It's going to be nice. It'll build some resiliency.
I'll put some concrete in his bottle and harden him up a bit. He'd be fine. Put hairs in his chest.
Figure it out.
Listen, thanks very much. I really appreciate you coming on, giving up your time. I would think one of my fondest memories from the games last year was getting to hang out with you a bit when Lucy was doing her stuff. You're a cool guy. Congrats on the move to Nashville and the imminent arrival of little Smith. I was gonna say you could call it like Iron or Black or Shape Smith, Iron Smith, Blacksmith. They'd all be good names. Keep those. Just jot those down. Just when she's starting to push, start suggesting names like that. Be like, hey, so I was talking to this guy.
She'll be like, yeah, they're on the list. They just happen to be at the bottom of the list. That's perfect.
Okay, yeah. They're on A list. Yes. so it's fine.
She'll really appreciate my humor and my jokes when she's in the middle of that. That's really going to be nice.
Yeah. Actually, from experience, I don't find it funny. Just FYI.
That's good to know.
Thanks everyone for watching, commenting and stuff. Subscribe to the channel, please. Thanks, Jared. Best to everyone in Nashville as well. Great catch up.
Appreciate it, man.